News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
All righty, Dan and Dalton at 6 minutes after 8 o'clock on Mobile Mornings. We're at 60 degrees, cloudy skies. You can expect rain now that's in the Gulf of Mexico to make its way up here and pester us much of the day. Then we're going to have the stronger storms come through probably after the parade tonight and into the morning, and that's what we're about to have.
Yeah, we'll get some rain tomorrow as well, and it should be clear by tomorrow afternoon, according to Dr. Bill. And then we'll get a nice stretch of dry weather, and temperatures getting a little bit back to what we'd expect, highs in the 60s, lows at night in the upper 30s, lower 40s. So a little bit more normal, but as he laid out the extended forecast, when parades begin again next week, Thursday, we might be looking at more rain.
First chance of rain, yeah. So ideal weather, but not on parade nights,
right,
except for Saturday night.
And reminder, if you're digging the Moon Pie Minutes, and they are great, as they always are, we've got each one listed on our website, fmtalk1065.com. You can go back and listen to the story of Mardi Gras from the home of Mardi Gras. Listen to every single day from 12th night on as we head into Mobile's parading season beginning tonight. Plenty of things we can discuss this hour, some things we weren't able to get to earlier in the week, like the Kari Lake hot mic and why the head Republican in Arizona had to step away, had to resign from his post this week because of a hot mic that Kari Lake had. We've got that audio. And we also could talk about the Texas versus Biden administration thing that's going on.
Up to half the United States, 25 states, I believe, have backed Texas on this move now, saying, hey, they got to protect themselves, as in, you know, a case maybe where we would have to protect ourselves. If you know, the states are looking at it like, hey, what would you do if you were in that position?
Right.
What would you do if you bordered the Mexican border and the federal government was absolutely doing little, if anything, about it?
Yeah, and it took long enough, but Governor Kay Ivey did finally weigh in and join that chorus, so we'll get into that as well. But Dan and I, off the air, kind of our conversation this week has partially revolved around this really weird story.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. So let me open it up here, and then we'll start the discussion on it, okay?
Please do.
So here we go.
A lot of this just doesn't add up.
No.
Yeah.
The families of three Kansas City Chiefs fans who mysteriously died in the backyard of a friend's home after a watch party earlier this month are grappling with mounting questions about their loved ones and their loved ones' final moments. Now, more than 2 weeks after Clayton McGeaney, 36, David Harrington, 37, and Ricky Johnson, 38, were found frozen to death behind a Kansas City, Missouri home, authorities issued a statement saying that no foul play is suspected. So the man in question is a Mr. Willis. That's his home, where the gentleman ended up freezing to death behind the home. Questions remain unanswered as to why the bodies were found on January 9th, 2 days after the men were last seen, or how homeowner Jordan Willis did not hear worried family members who came knocking on his door after not hearing from McGeaney, Harrington, and Johnson. So Willis, I guess, he's in the crux of this. Take it from there. He said he fell asleep and was asleep for 2 days.
Right. He said he was out for 2 days. Now, what they've gathered about this Willis is he is an HIV research scientist, which I'm not sure that matters at all here. Now, there's another person that was watching the games with them, and I'm trying to find exactly the TV show he said they were watching when he left. It was like Jeopardy or Wheel of Fortune or something. But he was there with them, watched the game, and then he gets out while they're watching something else. You've got the homeowner, the HIV research scientist, who falls asleep for, he says, 48 hours.
Man.
I read that where these guys were found, frozen to death, was like outside of these large windows. So if he was looking out the window, he would have likely been able to see these guys, his alleged friends, right?
Yeah.
And his parents have also weighed in here. Now, they're saying drugs are a possibility.
Okay.
But his parents, or at least the parents of one of the men who was found dead, they are convinced that something fishy happened here. They said they believe that the men saw something they shouldn't have. And I guess the allegation here is that Willis, the only man who was alive, the man who says he slept for nearly 48 hours after the game, who is not a suspect, They believe he did something to these men and then either dragged them outside or that they were outside when he did something to them, whether they drugged or whatever they're indicating here. But the parents are saying, hey, this doesn't add up at all. They were friends. They wouldn't have the family doesn't believe they would have intentionally overdosed on anything. But
all three, which is crazy, right? And so the questions that are kind of just flying around all this is, when did they leave Mr. Willis's home? And Mr. Willis has changed the story slightly from it happened around then to, no, I was already in bed when starting his 48 hours of slumber, like a black bear. But he said, I was already in bed when they left. They were still alive and in the house, is what he said.
When he went out.
When he went
out of consciousness.
Yeah.
One of the family members of one of these men said, I'm aware that they may have done some substances that were questionable, but the idea was to get high, not dead. If they were supposed to be friends, why didn't Willis come find them? I'm sure they have 100 different answers to that, but that's my question. And the family's upset because, you know, you said this happened 2 weeks ago. The game was on the 7th that they gathered to watch, and then they were found dead after that. Well, in the meantime, as this Willis has not been a suspect, the family's saying, well, you weren't able to test him for alcohol. You didn't test him for drugs. He's had plenty of time to get rid of any evidence. So they're wanting this, you know, they're wanting Kansas City police to look further into it, or at least give the appearance that they're looking into it.
Right. So you're going to have a toxicology report at some point is going to come down and is going to answer some questions of the guys that are dead. I think that'll say a lot. What was it? If their body still has it in its system after all that time?
Yeah, that would answer a lot of things. But just a really weird story, right? You don't see that happen very often. And there's certainly been some true crime stories over the years where, even here recently, where you're like, wow, that would make a movie. But it certainly seems like something that will be a feature film in the next 5 to 10 years.
And I'm maybe going to kick myself a little bit here because sometimes you really do need to examine everything, but from face value right now, it doesn't look good on the homeowner.
Mm-mm.
At all. The little switch of the story, plus the fact that he slept for 48 hours.
That's, to me, that is the main claim here where I'm like, are you serious,
He didn't have to go into work for a couple of days, I guess.
Well, he's an HIV research scientist, so maybe things have progressed enough that they feel confident. They're only working 3 days a week on the HIV research.
Maybe so. I don't know. I've never talked to an HIV research engineer. What is he?
I guess. Yeah. I don't know if that's exactly what he'd be, but I don't know. We'll keep our eyes on that and see if there's any breaks in the case.
It's got to be.
And you know, one of the things could be home video. If there was some filming of the men leaving the home and then somehow not leaving the yard and staying frozen outside. This is a really interesting case here with Ring doorbell, which I think of all the different home video appliances, doorbells, things of that nature, Ring is probably by far the best seller. There's some other companies that do the same thing, but Ring by far sells the most.
Yep.
And now police and fire departments around the nation will no longer be able to request users' doorbell video footage from Ring. And that's an announcement that came from the Amazon-owned company, Ring. They said in a blog post this week that Ring will end its, quote, request for assistance tool, meaning that public safety agencies will no longer be able to request and receive video in the Ring Doorbell Neighbors app. They also didn't provide a reason for that decision. The head of the Neighbors app said in a blog post that public safety officials can still use Ring's Neighbor app to share helpful safety tips, updates, and community events, but not ask for and receive video. The decision follows a flurry of criticism and concerns from privacy advocates over the feature and the company's partnerships with hundreds of police departments across the country. In 2021, Ring altered its policy to make police requests available to the public on its Neighbors app. And in the past, law enforcement agencies could send a private email to Ring owners who lived near an investigation to request video footage from their doorbell cameras. So they'd see where the crime happened, get on this app, look for people nearby who have Ring doorbells, and then through the app, private message them asking for that footage.
Okay, and now, the footage can be sent through the app?
Yeah, I'm not sure how they get the actual footage over to, can share it through the app. Mm-hmm. That's probably how they did it, but they may have had another method that law enforcement would come and grab that footage and then use it in the case to indict someone.
Does it sound a little bit like what they did in Canada last week we were talking about? Up in Canada, where the Quebec province, the law enforcement came out talking to individual owners of Ring and things like that and said, you are not allowed to post those.
Yeah, so even publicly they're saying you can't post footage from your camera.
Your camera, and you see a crime or you see a porch pirate, whatever, and you're looking for help. That is a private, now that not here, but that is a privacy issue in
Canada,
in the Quebec province, I think.
So, well, you can still share it publicly in America, unlike Canada,
right?
But they're just saying law enforcement can't go through the DMs and ask for that footage anymore.
All right, so they can't ask for it. Can you present it to it? Can you still give that to them, or is Ring saying that's off?
I think you can. Yeah, I think if you know there's an investigation and you say, hey, I've got something that might help here. Now, law enforcement still can access the videos with a search warrant, while Ring has the right to share footage without users' permission in limited circumstances. I'm sure that's one of the rights you sign away with a click of your thumb whenever you download the Ring app. And there's been a lot of lawsuits as well. They said Amazon has had to pay millions of dollars to settle alleged privacy violations involving the Ring doorbell. So maybe there's people that are sending in footage of innocent people that were caught on their doorbell.
Yeah,
maybe that's why they're having to pay out some of this.
I don't know. Who knows what is being caught on, though, people are getting that now. Ring itself, I guess, the Amazon's being sued by people who are sharing it with the privacy issues, but I don't quite... I can see it lawyering up and saying, we got to do something about this. We're losing millions of dollars. But exactly how is all that happening?
I guess someone gets a lawyer and they say, hey, I think my neighbor is filming me against, you know, if your apartment is across from their apartment, they've got a Ring doorbell trained on you. I'm not sure if that's similar to any of the cases, but it's been serious enough that Amazon's paid $5.8 million in refunds. Now, that was because the FTC said that employees and contractors of Ring were accessing private videos on their own and had lax security practices that allowed hackers to access the accounts fairly easily. But
so that's employees of Ring themselves
looking into footage shouldn't have had. Yeah,
getting a little snoopy and bowing to those urges to see things that you shouldn't be seeing.
And also not having good enough security to keep hackers from that private footage. So a lot of different ways you could take that conversation, but this probably doesn't help the crime situation if police aren't allowed to do what they've been doing and getting that footage.
And that crime situation is pretty bad with the Porch Pirates. We just came out of that season of the year. It's 8:19. Dalton FM Talk 106.5 at 8:24. A little Wet Willy weekend as we head into a weekend. What was the, when did the Nodine story come out? Yesterday? 1819 News?
Yeah, 1819.
Crafted by journalist Jim Ziegler?
Journalist, yes. Jim Ziegler on the scene.
Contributor
to 1819, giving you information you will only get from 1819 News, and that is that at some point, former Mobile County Commissioner Stephen Nodine fell in the streets of Pensacola this week.
Yes.
And it wasn't just any kind of fall. It was a fall that was serious enough that they had to load the former commish onto a gurney and put him in the back of an ambulance.
All the pictures are there.
They are, and a little blood on the noggin. Now, he's not sure what caused the fall, Nodine says.
He's not sure what caused the fall, but there was more photojournalism coverage of it than happened to Kennedy in 62, God's sakes.
Whoever was with Nodine, instead of helping the poor man up off the ground, just immediately...
There's a dozen photo ops right here. Don't move, Stephen. You see him. There's photographs that ended up on his Facebook page, I guess, of him The moment he fell, evidently. If you're going to snap a picture rather than give him a hand and get him off the ground.
Right.
I don't know what all that was about. They also showed that he was meeting with, and he was friendly with a homeless person in downtown Pensacola.
Yeah.
And he bought him a OJ and a scone or something like that, mm-hmm. and gave him a London Fog coat. I mean, it was all this story about platitudes toward Nodine, and then suddenly, plot twist, he falls, and they get pictures of all of it and putting him in the gurney. And it's all there.
It's just very well documented. Very well. And, you know, of course, we're hoping the best for Mr. Nodine.
It's strange.
It looks like a heck of a fall. But, yeah, he was documenting his little one-on-one with the homeless gentleman. He said his name's Robert. This was just before 9 a.m. on Wednesday, just before the fall. He said, I don't have much, but I buy Robert orange juice and a muffin each morning at Fosco's on Palifax in downtown Pensacola. Robert never asks for money, but today I gave him my London Fog coat, and he was so grateful. So
I'm looking at 1819 News, and the story is no longer up.
And you know,
I don't know where you're going to find it.
You did say it earlier, but Jim Ziegler, the journalist on this, you've got two legends of the game. Jim Ziegler reporting on Stephen Nodine. Yeah. Nodine doing this great act, giving his coat to homeless gentlemen.
You mean gesture?
Gesture.
Not acting.
I would never say that.
Okay.
And then apparently slips and falls. He is not sure that that's exactly how things happen, but he slips and falls. Pictures the whole way. And then one of the better pictures is Nodine in the hospital. At this point, he's been transported by medical emergency vehicle.
Yeah, but the photographer is still by his side.
Photographer's still taking great shots, and he's got the neck brace on. He looks like Hugh Freeze when he was coaching Liberty from the gurney in the press box that mm-hmm. one year.
Yep.
So best to Stephen Nodine.
Absolutely.
It's on his Facebook page. If you want to dig in, if you can't find the 1819 story, but it is located there. If you'd like to, maybe some well wishes for Stephen Nodine.
Yeah, sure.
As he is on the road to recovery.
What's that, Leanna?
It's on our page.
Yeah, I thought Leanna. She snapped that thing up yesterday when we told her about it.
Was it Leanna on the scene? Was Leanna taking the pictures as Nodine was taking the fall?
Somebody in our building was aware that he's either in Pensacola a lot or he has moved to Pensacola. I don't know. I don't know what that story is, but a very odd story. And if you go to our Facebook page, check mm-hmm. it out there, because right now, possibly through the embarrassment of it all, it's no longer on 1819 News.
I love going to 1819 for my Stephen Nodine news.
So yeah. I mean, with all the photographs, I mean, it told you, you could have written the story without reading the story.
My favorite kind of story, where I don't have to read.
Everything was documented by photograph,
yeah.
and it became obvious. He gave the guy the coat. He slipped and fell, hit his head, blood coming off his head. He's up on the gurney. He's then in the ambulance, and then he's at the hospital. It's all there.
No police report filed. Nothing. So that's the only place we could have gotten the story was where we got it. And, you know, Jason, we were talking about Ring no longer just handing over footage to law enforcement, and I was talking about the Neighbors app, which is what Ring uses as a community kind of thing.
Yes.
He said the Neighbors app has been censored big time and now basically only allows lost pets and weather posts. Any attempt to report crime is removed instantly, totally ridiculous, and only caters to the criminals. You know, I've noticed that the Nextdoor app, which it's a lot of BS on there, a lot of unimportant things, but
yeah.
at least on the Nextdoor app, if something goes down, generally you can construct what happened through user comments. But on the Neighbors app, you're right. Something happens, and I never see anything. And something right down the street from me, as I drove up last week, there were like five or six police cruisers at one house. And
you've got no idea what's going on.
You know, somebody on Ring said, what was happening over there? And then there was never any response, never any information. Nothing came out in any police reports. So my head is still in the clouds as far as what that was. But, yeah, you're right, Jason. The Ring doorbell app, not my favorite.
830 FM Talk 106.5, where it's about to be in 15 seconds. Dr. Bill with a forecast straight ahead, some news, and we'll get back to chatting with you at 251-343-0106.
8:34 on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for listening to Mobile Mornings on this Friday. Right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive, where we talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing good. More rain on the way, but then things are going to dry out in our area for several days. But if you do get into any kind of fender bender or anything of that nature, McConnell Automotive's body shop is great. But if you're shopping for a vehicle, man, you guys have some great inventory as well.
That's right. One-stop shop. Got the body shop. They're doing great back there. In fact, we're going to do a little expansion on it back there here shortly. And if that unfortunate accident does happen and get it totaled out, McConnellAutomotive.com. You check all our vehicles out there. We got trucks, SUVs, cars, a little low interest rate out there going on now. And everybody's been liking that. So just give us a call, 251-476-4141, and we're going to be here all weekend. I hope this rain gets out of here and Mardi Gras starts. Mm-hmm. And remember, the Mardi Gras, we're not pulling this year, but remember Mardi Gras and McConnell. You know, we got those trucks. We got some beautiful trucks out there.
You sure do. That's a fact. We appreciate it, Louie.
Hey, thank y'all.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and that website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Keeping up, Nikki Haley's new Donald Trump nickname is?
From Donald Trump to Nikki Haley? Mm-hmm. Well, it was Bird Brain.
That's it. That's where I'm at right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if he had escalated it since then.
No, we're at Bird Brain. Currently, things could change. Nikki Haley's 2024 campaign says it hauled in well over $1 million in donations since the Republican presidential candidate responded on social media to a warning from President Donald Trump directed at GOP donors to stop contributing to Haley. Trump, taking to his Truth Social platform on Wednesday, warned anybody that makes a contribution to Bird Brain from this moment forth will be permanently barred from the MAGA camp. We don't want them and will not accept them because we put America first and always will. Bird Brain is the latest derogatory nickname that Trump has come up with. He uses it to refer to Haley, a former two-time governor of the state of South Carolina. Haley on Wednesday night said at a large rally in North Charleston, South Carolina, she hauled in well over $1 million online donations in the 24 hours since her speech in New Hampshire. We have 200,000 donors from all 50 states, she added. 95% of those donations are $200 and less. So she's painting a picture that her appeal and support is broad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know,
well, it was broad enough or early enough.
The RNC under the excellent, the fantastic leadership of Ronna McDaniel, who does everything right, and who definitely didn't completely screw up the 2022 midterms.
Maybe not, yeah.
She wanted to go ahead and hand the nomination over. She wanted to have the RNC, when they meet next week, go to a vote and declare Trump the presumptive nominee. And when Haley's people heard about that, they were like, whoa, 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 this race isn't over. We still have a chance. And Trump, I guess, surprisingly or maybe not surprisingly, he said, I don't want that. I don't want the RNC to go ahead and declare me the winner. He said, I am, but I'm going to do it the old-fashioned way and knock her out of the race. I haven't seen any of the Trump critics who say that under President Trump, it'll be the end of democracy as we know it, that he's a authoritarian. They haven't come out since he said, no, don't declare me the winner, and said, hey, props to Trump for not being a dictator and for saying he's going to win the race the old-fashioned way. But, I mean, it basically is over for Haley, right? You look at the Nevada caucus that we have coming up in 2 weeks, and Trump is just dominating there. And then South Carolina is next. And that's Haley's home state,
yeah.
And she is getting trounced there.
Yeah, that could be an embarrassing evening, I would think, if you have any self-pride at all. Like, mm-hmm. Your home state got to hurt a little bit more. Also, a couple of things on Trump. One is the influence he's having, since he is now the presumed nominee for the Republican Party. The influence he may be already having on these talks about the border in Ukraine and trying to keep them from caving into too many Democratic wishes.
Yeah, which, I mean, it makes sense. And there's the Biden administration, they're blaming the Republicans for not getting the deal signed, of course. That's what you would expect, right? But now you've got some of the moderate Republicans in the Senate, like Mitt Romney, mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell, if you even want to call them moderate.
Mm-hmm.
And they're blaming Trump for this border deal not coming together. When you laid it out earlier, we can go through it again. This deal that Senator Lankford has worked out,
yeah,
which is just completely not what true conservatives want to see.
This, right.
It gives out all kinds of work visas. They say, well, it brings back Title 42. Well, yeah, but you can't expel until you get to the numbers of 4,000 to 5,000
per day
crossing the border.
Right.
When in the past, even Obama's borders are, whatever the term he had for them then, was it Jay Johnson? I can't remember who it was, said that when they get to over 1,000 border crossers a day, that overwhelms the system. Well, this new Republican deal wouldn't even put Title 42 into action.
So you're quadruply overloaded.
Yeah, exactly. And so, 50,000 more work visas, also representation for children who illegally cross the border. They
yep.
get free legal representation.
Yeah. And those who are mentally compromised or whatever, we take them into our care.
So all kinds of issues the Republicans have with this deal, and they're saying it's dead on arrival. But then you have Mitt Romney blaming Trump, and Trump just doesn't want them to give Biden a border win mm-hmm. in an election year. Here's Romney from yesterday.
The idea that someone running for president would say, please hurt the country so I can blame my opponent and help my politics is a shocking development.
So Romney's upset, and he's upset at Trump. What's new? Mitch McConnell has kind of taken that same line, although less directly blaming Trump.
Yeah.
It was notable that on Wednesday, McConnell was talking about the actual items in the bill,
mm-hmm.
like he was still trying to push people into the vote. And then yesterday didn't even mention the border or Ukraine or anything.
Yeah. Some congressman saying that we lost our leverage on this when we had it.
Yeah. Ted Cruz has been taking aim at McConnell, but then so did Senator Ron Johnson out of Wisconsin. He said that this is all about McConnell and his own personal enemies on the Republican side.
I think that's blaming somebody else for, you know, his poor negotiating tactics and trying to actually get a secure border.
But how silly, how stupid would some of these Republicans be to ram through a border deal that most voting Republicans don't like, that the presumptive nominee doesn't like,
mm-hmm.
who is, for all intents and purposes, the current leader of the Republican Party, and on top of that, giving the Biden administration a win in an election year. It just absolutely makes zero sense.
Also, this, and we'll get back to Trump in a second, I thought it was interesting, this news, this economic news, which was much better than they had projected, comes out today. And I guess every day from this point on, we're in election mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're in campaigning mode for sure. The last thing on that, too, Dalton, is Trump, if he is uncontested, if they do call the match over, right, and Trump supporters have no real reason to come out on the
primaries.
5th of March,
yeah.
How is that going to affect the race, the two most notable races, including, both districts 1 and 2?
Yeah, well, I think it makes things a little more difficult on Barry Moore if there's lower turnout. I think that's probably a better thing for Jerry Carl if there's lower turnout in the AL1 Republican primary. In the AL2 Republican primary, the Trump vote not turning out in the numbers you expect, I think, would be a better thing for Dick Brubaker,
mm-hmm.
who's playing more of the moderate as he looks to try to win the general election votes from moderates and maybe even cross over some Democrats.
Yeah, he's got to be careful the way he runs that campaign.
Now,
right?
The young guy we talked to, young man, Hampton Harris, and some of these other competitors who we maybe haven't heard of in AL2 as much that are running on the Trump card,
mm-hmm.
like, hey, I'm more conservative than these others, yeah, they would be hurt by Trump being the presumptive nominee as we go into Super
right,
Tuesday.
Right, right. So something to keep an eye on when you're trying to size up these elections. You've got to know, or you have to factor in, how many are coming out. And it just felt like, I guess Jeff Paul was saying, it wasn't really the numbers that were more, it was a level of enthusiasm that the more partisan crowd
would show up to.
They had more enthusiasm and were louder. That's pretty much the way you look at these two candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And you had Jerry Carl's audience was not as boisterous but they may have been there in their numbers, but to the campaign that Barry Moore is running is completely different campaign.
It is. And you mentioned the good economic news for the Biden administration, which they did get yesterday, as growth for the U.S. economy was at 3.1% over the past year. And that is much higher than what they had projected when they saw recession as likely, very likely. They were predicting only a 0.2% growth for the year. So they get the numbers in. It's actually 3.1% growth. And they're expecting to continue to see expansion next year, but at a much slower pace. And you'll also have to see what the Fed Reserve does as they possibly cut interest rates again after raising them so many times over the last couple of years. But then you also have to look at hiring and whether this consumer spending continues, which has really been the engine of the entire thing. Well, it makes sense. It's the engine of the entire economy, pretty much, is consumer spending, which just hasn't slowed down. So you would say, okay, great. Then the economy is in much better shape than we predicted.
Wait.
But what I think might be happening is that the younger generations are just less afraid of going into serious debt and less afraid of bankruptcy. So even though the money is drying up, the consumer spending is staying at increased levels, at least for now. But you look at this Newsweek article, and they said there's been an uptick in bankruptcy assistance, and it's been mostly among Generation X and millennials. They said that signals a burgeoning debt crisis that is overshadowing recent economic optimism. This was from Legal Shield's Consumer Stress Legal Index. They found a 29% surge, a positive surge in consumer confidence since November, and that even reached a three-year peak here at the end of last year. They draw the data from over 35 million legal service requests, but they're now forecasting a dip in the consumer confidence as U.S. household debt has seen an increase, rising 1.3% in the third quarter of last year. U.S. household debt now sits at $17.29 trillion. And they said the uptick was propelled by increases across mortgage, auto loan, credit card, and student loan balances. And a pretty good portion of those people are now dealing with bankruptcy, according to Legal Shield. They said there's been a 24.7% increase in Gen X reaching out for bankruptcy assistance year over year, and a 40% surge among millennials reaching out for bankruptcy assistance year over year. So you have Gen X and millennials just loading up the credit cards. The consumer spending for the economy continues, but then these waves of people who are apparently asking for bankruptcy assistance and maybe in a lot worse financial shape than they were letting on.
Yeah, so that's what I was taking away from it too, was maybe more factors to it, but the credit card debt that a lot of these younger people are building up, and which is not a good thing to build up, right?
No.
They're probably, you know, just feel like life goes on. I've got a credit card, and those who have been less affected by the history of bad credit card decisions are more likely to say, you know, let the good times roll here.
Tap it out.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But that is misguided because those percentage rates are just so high.
Yeah. And then if that is what ends up, kind of pulling the legs out from under the stool that is the economy. I don't know. If everyone at the same time goes into bankruptcy, then what does that mean for the economy? It wouldn't be good.
And was it last year at this time we were having banks themselves that were just kind of going under?
Yeah.
January and February of last year. Some
bad bets that were made.
Yeah, West Coast banks. So banks themselves in their own sort of troubles. It's 8:48 with Dan and Dalton.
Yeah, I want to play some of that Carrie Lake audio also that made big news earlier this week as one of the top Republicans in Arizona bribing her to get out of the race.
Yeah. Now he had to quit, right?
He's out.
It's 8:48 on Mobile Mornings. Warning. January is divorce month.
January's divorce
month. Now, it's not the month that most divorces happen. It's when people begin to assess things after the holidays and all that is over with. And now you're like, that creep next to me, really.
So you're like,
time.
I thought over Christmas that I didn't like you.
Yeah, but now
I know I
am
like
so
you.
Sure of it.
Yeah.
So anyway, not just breakups, but divorce. They start getting in touch with their attorney and start the process.
Is it?
And maybe on their own, you know, not.
Is that in any way related to people trying to give up booze in January?
So dry January.
They give up the booze, and then they decide they really don't like who they're living with.
They get mad as hornets because they're just dealing with this person completely sober now. They're like, this is over.
Yeah, no, you got to stick with the sobriety for longer than a few days before you decide you need the divorce. Just wait.
Chill out a little bit.
Your mind changes. So this thing over in Arizona, I know it's a country away from us, basically.
Yeah, but Carrie Lake's a big deal.
She's a big name. And, you know, she leaked this audio. I kind of talked about this a little bit on Midday Mobile the other day. But audio that was released where before she officially entered the U.S. Senate race in Arizona, some very powerful people were trying to keep her out and were offering to pay, apparently, to keep Carrie Lake out of the Senate race. And the in-between, the messenger who you're not supposed to shoot, was Jeff DeWitt, the Republican Party chairman for Arizona, basically the John Wall of Arizona, right?
Right.
He is the Alabama GOP chairman. Jeff DeWitt was chairman in Arizona. Well, he resigned on Wednesday after that audio emerged of him trying to entice Lake to not pursue the GOP nomination for Senate.
Right.
In a statement, the 51-year-old DeWitt said he opted to step down rather than fight for his position after Lake's team threatened to release a more damaging recording. So she says she has even more out there on DeWitt.
Now, these are powerful Republicans dissuading her from...
Well, he said from back east. The way DeWitt sounded in the recording was like it was a movie. And he was like, hey, I don't know if you know this, but I can't talk about this publicly, so make sure there's no recordings going on. But the powerful people back east, they want to make it worth your while to not... this. Well, let me just play part of it. This is just... Now, it was a 10-minute video. There's a supercut I've got. Maybe I'll play that. But here's just 56 seconds of him asking Lake to stay out of the race. Let's see here. You have me... okay, we're muted. So here we go. One more time. Try it from the top here.
Okay.
Carrie Lake and Jeff DeWitt.
Is there a number at which...
I can be bought.
Not be bought.
That's what it's about.
You can take a pause for a couple years.
No.
And then go right back to what you're doing.
Mm-mm. No. 10 million, 20 million, 30... No. A billion? No. This is not about money. This is about our country. I think it's disturbing that they would even... that anybody would think this is...
No, to be fair, even me, I'll say this. I want a fresh face right now for the reason that I've never seen anyone... I can't think of a single person in a federal race who lost, ran in and won. I can't think of it. If you can think of it, let me know.
I'm not going to let these people who hate our country... tell me not to run. You should call them and tell them to get behind me.
So Carrie Lake comes out shining in this.
It does feel like a movie scene. Like she really had her lines down completely. That could have been. And she was a TV anchor. So she's not an actress, but there's some of that theatrics in being in front of a camera all the time, right?
Yeah, she's good. She's good at playing the game, for sure. Here's a supercut. I don't know how much of this you just heard, but a little bit more from their conversation.
This is back east. There are very powerful people that want to keep you out.
I know they do.
But they're willing to put their money where their mouth is in a big way. Is there a number at which...
I can be bought.
Not be bought.
What it's about.
You can take a pause for a couple years.
No.
And then go right back to what you're doing.
So, that's part of what I just played there. But do you see how it sounds like he's in a movie?
Yeah, and he's, hey, don't shoot the messenger, right? Mm-hmm. I'm delivering this news, but I don't want you to lash out at me.
Yeah.
I'm just delivering the news, and the negotiations kind of begin with me.
Well, he's out now.
Yeah.
And Carrie Lake's still in that race. Mm-hmm. He played a pretty big part in the past two Trump campaigns. I'd love to know who the powerful people back east are.
Yeah.
He could really be talking about anybody there.
Boy, that is a very, very good question. It is 8:59. We're about 20 seconds from 8:59 on FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore is on the way. That's always a good show.
Yeah, he'll have Todd Stacey, April Marie Fogle, and Chris Elliott, the state senator, on with Jeff today.